everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Before we get started with my guests, I'd like to tell you the new book releases this week. I'm going to start kind of back from one from August, but I love this writer. Dyer Wilk has a book called Patricia Tyler released Dark Water. Nancy Nagel released Sweet Tea and Secrets. She's going to be on your book garden later on in the year with Tina Sesetic. Carolyn Brown released Cowboy Honor, Rebecca Zanetti Hidden. Terrence McCauley, one of the greatest guys in the world, released When the Bullets Fly today. Congratulations, Terrence. Editors Chris Radigan and Ron Earl Phillips just released a book called Deadlines. It's a tribute to William Wallace, who is part of our noir crime community, and he's dearly missed. The Black Car Business, edited by Lawrence Kelter, is out, and Pamela Kopfler released Downright Dead, the second of her cozy mysteries. Make sure you go to Amazon or Brick and Mortar and check out books, and make sure you leave reviews, please. 2018 BoucherCon McCavity Award-winning author Paul Dean Marks with me. For those of you who don't follow Paul, he is such a Los Angelino that he has a love affair with the city. It is practically a character in his books. If you want to see some old pictures of Hollywood and so on, Paul has some really interesting stories. I encourage you to go to his page. Paul, welcome back to Authors on the Air. It's been a couple of years since you've been on. I was very happy to see you and win your award at BoucherCon this year. Congratulations.
Thank you. I was thrilled, and it was a huge surprise, but a wonderful one.
Absolutely. You know, I was reading your bio, and you've won a ton of awards for your writing. You know, you're not one of those who puts out three or four books a year. You are so cautious with your writing, and I think it shows. So it started with the Seamus. Well, Broken Windows started with the Seamus Award for White Heat because they're kind of brother and sister books. You won the McCavity for Windward, which was terrific. It was part of an anthology. Windward was also chosen as one of the best American mysteries of 2018. You've won the Ellery Queen Reader's Choice in 2016 for Ghost of Bunker Hill. I can't even go on and on and on. You also were nominated for Coast to Coast, Private Eyes from Sea to Shining Sea, the Anthony Anthology Award nominee. And your list goes on. You just have this big love affair with Los Angeles, California. Let's talk about that. Are you a native to Los Angeles?
I am. And in fact, on my mother's side, the family goes back a ways. But I am a native. And, you know, I love L.A. and part of me hates L.A. You know, it's a love-hate relationship, but I guess more love than hate.
You really like the earlier Los Angeles when all the movie lots were there. That seems to be what you really enjoy talking about. You write a little bit about it. You kind of like the, I don't want to say old days because, you know, everything comes around and goes back around again. But you really like a lot of the old actors and so on, don't you?
I do. I like, you know, I'm a Turner Classics movie kind of guy. I like old black and white movies, particularly film noir. And I do like the Hollywood history that is, you know, symbiotically tied in with Los Angeles. When I was a kid, you know, every time you turned around, you'd be driving past a back lot. A lot of them are gone these days. But you know, if you're familiar with Los Angeles, if any of the listeners are familiar, all of Century City used to be 20th Century Fox's backlot, and now it's all office buildings and condos and things like that. But you know, the history of Hollywood is so tied in with the history of Los Angeles. They say L.A. is a company town and the company is Hollywood.
Wow. I was reading your bio and it said you have the dubious distinction of being the last person to have shot a film on the fabled MGM backlot before it bit the dust. What was that film and what was your role in it?
It was an independent film, and it was actually a musical, about as far as you can get from a noir kind of story. And I didn't actually say that, but Stephen Bingen, the author of MGM, one of the authors of MGM Hollywood's Greatest Backlot, said that I was the last person to shoot there. MGM had one main lot in Culver City, which is in greater Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And on that lot were their offices and sound stages and things. And then they had four or five more back lots scattered throughout the city that had exterior sets on them, everything from lakes to New York streets and that kind of thing. And all of them were gone except for one that was directly across the street from the main lot. And I got permission to film there, and apparently I'm the last one to have done so. And it's kind of cool to be able to say you're the last person to film there, but it's also kind of bittersweet.
I bet it is. Were you a filmmaker? Were you a cameraman? What do you, when you say you filmed there, tell me what that means specifically.
Well, I co-wrote the film, and I directed it, and it's hard to find, but, you know, it's still, I still can say I'm the last to shoot there.
Wow. So you told me when we were talking last week that film is really in your blood. You really love the old films a lot. So I would imagine that it is bittersweet for you to have been the last person there. But, you know, you write very noir style crime fiction and fiction in general. How do you define noir?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different ways people define noir. But
mm-hmm.
for me, the main thing is that it's basically who somebody trips over their own faults, somebody who has an Achilles heel, some kind of weakness, some kind of greed or desire that leads them down a dark path. And then kind of everything else, you know, is icing on the cake. But for me, the main thing is it's somebody who, you know, from some weakness goes down the wrong road.
They actually are their own worst enemy, in other words.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who are your early influences in your writing?
Well, in terms of, you know, mystery or noir writing, I like Raymond Chandler. To me, is, you know, heads and hands above everybody else.
Yeah, no doubt.
I also David Goodis. David Goodis is one of my favorites, especially his book Down There, which was made into the movie Shoot the Piano Player by Francois
mm-hmm.
Truffaut. I like Ross McDonald, Jim
Thompson.
Like
him. Ross McDonald, to me, you know, people don't talk about him quite as much, but he was a really fun person to read. I liked he and Elmer Leonard quite a bit. They were, you know, favorites for me. And there were others, too. So, you know, I get where
oh,
you're coming from. Go ahead.
The list is endless, really. Yeah,
yeah, it really is. Are there any authors that you're particularly fond of that are current?
There are. Sometimes I don't like naming people because I know a lot of people and I don't want to hurt other people's feelings if I don't name them. So
why don't we do this? Let me ask you this then. We'll skip over you naming people. Are you currently reading anyone's book right now?
I just finished a book. I'll Yeah, I just finished the book. All right. Yeah.
And did you like it? Can you tell us which what it is? Or what is the last book
it was,
you liked? I'm trying to be delicate about you know how I asked this question, because I know you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but what was the last book you read that you really enjoyed?
You know, it's like asking what your favorite thing is, and nothing comes to mind. I like Matt Coyle's books and Dennis Palumbo's Daniel Rinaldi series.
Yep.
I've read those recently. And I just recently finished Lawrence Osborne's, I can't remember the name of it, but his updating of Raymond Chandler's Philip Marlowe character when Marlowe is 72 years old. So that's the one I just finished.
Very good authors. I agree with you on all of them. Your new book, Broken Windows, just released last week. Last week, was it, or the week before? I can't remember. Oh, on September 10. I couldn't remember exactly because I remember announcing it. But let's talk about this, because this is kind of a sequel to White Heat, but not necessarily the sequel. It can be read as a standalone. If you've never read White Heat, shame on you, but you could still read Broken Windows and know exactly where you are. Will you tell us a little bit about the book and why you waited so long to write this book? Are you there? Paul? Gosh, I think I've lost my connection to him.
Yeah.
Yep. Paul, are you there? Oh, your connection dropped for some reason.
Here.
Okay. Let me ask the question again. This is kind of a sequel, but not really a sequel to White Heat. You can read it as a standalone and have a perfectly fulfilling story. Tell us about the book and why you waited 6 years to write it.
Okay, can you hear me now? Hello?
You're fading. Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead. I can hear you.
Okay. I actually wrote it a while back, but it was tied up with an agent, and there were some issues with the agent, and by the time I extricated myself from that situation, a lot of time had passed. So hopefully there won't be as much time between Broken Windows and the one that follows.
Will there be another book in this series? Okay. Tell everybody you've already written it, I bet, right?
No, it's not written, but I've talked to the publisher about it, and it's in process, shall we say.
Good. So the first thing, let's lay the groundwork a little bit and talk about the story of White Heat before we get into Broken Windows. Will you give us a little synopsis, please?
Well, White Heat is about a PI who considers himself a screw-up in many ways. And he is sitting in his office one day, and a guy comes in and wants him to find a woman who he claims is an old high school classmate of his. And this is in the days before computers are really prominent. They were around, but they weren't like they are today, and the Internet isn't like it was today. The story takes place in 1992. And it starts right before the Rodney King riots break out. So this guy comes into the PI, Duke Rogers' office, and he wants Duke to find this woman. And Duke, you know, it's such an easy thing. He knows he can do it real quickly. He doesn't even do paperwork with the guy. He takes the money. He calls a friend of his at the DMV, gets the info. The guy comes back a couple of days later. Duke gives it to him. The guy walks out, and a couple of days after that, he finds out that this woman is dead. And so he knows that he inadvertently led to her death, and he wants to make amends. So she was an actress, an up-and-coming young actress, and the character is sort of loosely based on Rebecca Schaefer. I don't know if anybody remembers that, who was an up-and-coming young actress. And I'm sorry?
She was stalked
and
murdered.
A guy found her and killed her. So Duke wants, you know, Duke has no way to know who the guy is, so he decides to try to trace him back through the actress and her family. The actress in this case is a black woman from South Central Los Angeles, so he heads down to her family's house and gets caught up in the riots the day they break out. And in the course of, you know, going through all of that, he deals with her family and a bunch of racial issues and things like that surrounding it while he's trying to solve the case.
So let's fast forward now to Broken Windows, because Duke is still in business. He's done what he's had to do in White Heat, and now we're in the future. What happens now in Broken Windows? I don't want any spoilers, obviously, but let's talk a little bit about this book.
Well, Broken Windows, you know, like you said, it's not a sequel per se, but it's a continuation of Duke and his sidekick Jack's stories. And Jack is about the most politically incorrect person you could come across. I like to say he always says the wrong thing, but he always does the right thing. He's sort of like, if you remember the old cartoons where there was a character and they'd have a little devil on one shoulder and an angel on
yes.
the other shoulder, Jack,
right.
devil on Duke's shoulder. And the story, you don't have to have read White Heat because I fill in some of the backstory. But basically, Broken Windows takes place a couple of years later. And in California in 1994, we had a proposition on the ballot called Prop 187, which was an anti-illegal alien proposition. And it was very controversial and a lot of emotions on both sides and things like that. And there's a undocumented worker who gets killed, and there's a woman down the street, a housekeeper who works for a family down the street from Duke, whose brother that is, and because of her, Duke gets involved in the case. He still wants to make amends for screwing up in White Heat and inadvertently causing the young actress's death. So he takes her case, and through the process of this, he gets involved in the immigration issues that are happening at the same time. And Jack, of course, is very anti-immigration, and, you know, they're like opposite sides. You know, Duke is going one way, Jack is going another, but eventually they have to pull together to solve the case.
Right. You have a lot of moving parts in this book. You've got, you know, the crazy lawyer and his ad. You've got the housekeeper, you've got the, you know, the jumper, all of these different things are going on. And so you got to pay close attention, not to say that there's any confusion, but it's a really interesting character study. At least I found it to be. You know, and it's, even though it's supposed to be at the end of, you know, before the 2000, it really is a very relevant book today, wouldn't you say?
Well, that's one of the things I like writing about both White Heat and Broken Windows and the coming third book in the series, is that while they're set in the 1990s, they deal with issues that are very relevant today. You know, White Heat dealt with racism in the context of a mystery thriller, and Broken Windows deals with immigration, again, in the context of a mystery thriller. So, you know, you don't get hit over the head. I'm not trying to preach to anybody. But, you know, there are ways to have fun. I hope they're good roller coaster rides and, like you said, a good character study. But also they give us a prism to look at what's happening today through, you know, the recent past, and maybe put some perspective on all the controversy and emotions raging over these issues today.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it occurs to me that you are a very prolific writer. Not necessarily, I mean, your books, obviously, but you really enjoy the writing process, don't you? You really like turning out stories.
Again, it's a love-hate relationship.
I like it.
I like the process. My wife likes to do jigsaw puzzles. And, you know, she has to make every piece fit perfectly. You know, you don't want to have a piece missing. And that's the way I look at writing short stories or novels. You know, they're my version of a jigsaw puzzle. I want to make sure every piece is filled in, no holes. And I like the process. You know, it starts out this kind of nebulous thing. I'm a panster, not a outliner. So, you know, it starts out this kind of crazy quilt that goes in every direction, and then I chip away and chip away, and eventually, you know, something comes of it.
Sure.
Something.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm particularly fond of with your writing is that from White Heat to Broken Windows with Duke Rogers, his successes and his failures are carried with him. He's not forgotten when things haven't worked out, and what his role is in whatever it is he's investigating. To me, that's real important, especially if you have a serious character. It's disingenuous, in my humble opinion, to have someone go around either killing someone or being somehow even unwittingly involved in taking someone's life and then have no emotional toll on the character. But Duke is a guy who he's just miserable with guilt, isn't he?
Well, he is, and, you know, I want to make him a living, breathing character. You know, like you say, you don't want him to go on and be an automaton that just can do whatever he does and not have any consequences or not have any feelings about it. So, you know, everything that he does today is colored by his life in the past. I mean, including, you know, he's got a strained relationship with his father, and that comes into play, you know. So it's everything, and I want him to be a real person, and I want people to relate to him. So, yeah, there is a lot of carryover in terms of the emotions from White Heat into Broken Windows.
Paul, you write both short stories and you write novels. Do you have a preference for one over the other, or is writing writing?
I think overall writing is writing. The thing that I like about short stories is there's more of an immediate gratification. You know, you can finish them faster and say, I've got a finished product, and hopefully, you know, it'll get published. You know, whereas writing a book is a much longer process. But while they're the same, they're also different. They require a different set of skills in some ways, because in some ways, I think a short story is actually harder to write because you're trying to do so much and get so much across in such a short space, whereas in a novel, you can explore things in much more depth.
We talked earlier about you being the last filmmaker on the MGM lot, and so you were the writer and director of this film. What did writing film teach you about writing books and short stories?
Well, my background is kind of in film as a script doctor. I don't know if people are familiar, but if you go to a movie and you see written by so-and-so and so-and-so, there's usually several uncredited people that have worked on the project in various ways. And that's what I did. I like to say no credit, no glory. And my dad could never figure out what I did for a living since I never got a screen credit. But so
funny.
I do come from that background. And, you know, writing screenplays are very highly structured, you know, in the famous three-act structure. And I think that gave me a good background for writing novels and short stories, which I often write a first draft in screenplay format, in a screenplay writing program. And, you know, I don't care much in early drafts about description or any of that stuff. It's interior, exterior, whatever the location. You know, Joe goes here and does this, and then a lot of dialogue. And, you know, I try to write in the three-act structure, and I think it helps. You know, I think it helps. You know, it's a little looser. I may be a little more loose than if I was writing an actual screenplay, but I think it's a good background to, you know, hang your story on. So in that sense, I think it's helped me a lot. On the other hand, when I first started writing prose, people said my stories and things read like screenplays, and I'm still working on the descriptions and things like that that you don't do really in a screenplay.
Right. You leave that up to your set designer and so on to kind of fill it in, right?
To a large extent, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So, you know, you're always writing. I know you and Amy are really private people. You kind of live on the outskirts of the city with your cats and dogs. But what do you do for fun?
Oh, boy. I don't know what I do for fun anymore. I like photography.
It's not the same, though, is it, Paul? It's not the same as old Hollywood. If your love of the city is what propels you to photograph, things have changed remarkably, haven't they?
Oh, the city is definitely different than it was when I was growing up. It's much more built up. And a lot of the, you know, Los Angeles, for the most part, doesn't have a lot of respect for its past in terms of architecture. But I think they're getting better about that and preserving older buildings. When I was a kid, it was still kind of Raymond Chandler's Los Angeles. And
right.
I don't think he'd recognize the city at all today. But I still like it, and I still like – I have a friend, and her and I used to go down – we just literally point the car in a direction and go explore the city. I mean, we went everywhere. And we had some great times, and we got to see some really cool things. Haven't done that in a while, but I keep thinking I'd like to do that again, just get in the car, point it in a direction. And, you know, unfortunately, when we were doing that, we were young and poor and couldn't take a lot of pictures, because in those days it was film, and film was really expensive. But today, you know, with digital cameras, you know, you could take a million pictures and cost nothing. So maybe I'll do that again.
You'd be stuck in a lot of traffic, though, that's for sure. Probably a lot different than when you used to go and photograph everything.
There's definitely more traffic. The rush hour is pretty much 24 hours a day now.
Yeah, I understand that. I know that you're a big film buff, and that you like to watch, you mentioned Turner classic movies, I think that's what it is. You go to film, though? Do you still go to movies?
You know, not as often as I used to. We kind of live in a rural place now, or a semi-rural place, like you said, on the outskirts of L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a different kind of lifestyle. When I lived in town, we used to get passes, and we'd go see a lot of screenings and things of newer movies. But these days, we pretty much watch them. We're on satellite here, so, you know, we watch them when they come on the satellite or something. And don't go to a lot of new movies, but, you know, every once in a while we'll still go or something. You know, these days it's I have more of a bunker mentality, you know. I just like hanging out at home.
I like that, a bunker mentality. I'm going to have to keep that in mind. That's kind of me, too. I understand that. It's scary out there. I don't want to get involved. And
it's not so much that it's.
It's,
no, go on.
You know, I live in a very small town, so it's not – I mean, I moved from Miami over to Fort Myers, and it's pretty quiet over here compared to Miami. But even so, I have no great desire to hop in my car and go anywhere, especially at night. So maybe that's just a sign of the times, no matter where you live. What's next
well,
for you?
Well, I lived a pretty wild life for a long time, and I've settled down, I guess, you know.
It ages you.
Where we live, it's really quiet because we don't even have a stop signal in our town, and a lot of people have horses and things like that. We are, however, about 30 seconds from the Angeles National Forest, which is considered LA's body dump, so it is still a very noir location, you know.
Wow. I don't know if I'd like being that close. what's next for you? Have you finished the next book? Or are you working on it? Are you still writing short stories for Ellery Queen? Tell me what's happening with you.
Well, a little bit of all of that. I am, you know, starting to work on the third book in the Duke Rogers series. I'm also working on another story in the Ghosts of Bunker Hill series that the previous ones have been published in Ellery Queen, and I hope the next one will be too. And I have a completed novel that I really like that it's set on the home front in Los Angeles during World War II, and you talk about writing about old LA. This is just the flavor of old Los Angeles. And it's about a musician in a jazz band on Central Avenue. Central Avenue was like the place for all the black nightclubs and things, and there's a murder involved, and it's a really cool story, and hopefully it'll see the light of day. That one's done. That is completed, and I guess I'm being a little bit vague on it because it's got some really unique aspects, but I loved writing it. When I was writing it, my mom was still alive, and she lived that era, and you know, I could go to her and her friends for firsthand information, you know, as opposed to just looking it up on the internet or something. But it deals with all the swing bands and all the stuff of, you know, you'd really recognize Chandler's LA in this story.
Sounds great. Will you tell everyone where they can find you on the webs and in social media, please?
My website is www.pauldmarks.com, and Marks is spelled M-A-R-K-S. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. If you go to my website, you know, you can get to all my other places through there. And, you know, I'm trying to keep my website up to date. So
it's really very, very much up to date. Congratulations on that. Congratulations on your McCavity win and all the other accolades that you deserve. Thank you for coming back on my show again, and I hope you'll come back again soon. Will you, please?
Oh, anytime. And thank you for having me. I really enjoy it.
Oh, thanks, and my best, Amy. And you and I'll talk again soon, I'm sure. Thanks so much. This is award-winning author Paul D. Marks. The new book is Broken Windows. Paul, thank you again. I hope you have a great rest of the week.
You too, Pam, and thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.